I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it's 1:38 p.m. on Wednesday, April 1st, 2026. Present today are Representative Jimmy, Representative Galvin, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Hannon, Representative Bynum, Representative Stapp, Co-Chair Schrage, Co-Chair Foster, and Co-Chair Josephson. I'm joined by Representative Allard and Representative Moore. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we will continue to take up amendments to House Bill 263 and 265, the operating budget and mental health budget. Please note, today is our last scheduled day to take up amendments on the operating budget. Now, when I say it's our last scheduled day, I'm referring to the schedule. It's our last day to do that. It's my intent to finish amendments by tonight, meaning we may be here late into the evening, and I ask you to plan accordingly. We will be offering some nourishment at 6:30. If there are no questions, we will get started. And the next amendment before us is Amendment 55, Representative Jimmy.
Yes, I move Amendment 55.
I'll object for discussion. Representative Jimmy.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Dolly Parton started this program because her father couldn't read. He grew up with no access to books, and she watched that shape his entire life. So she built a program with one simple promise. Your zip code will not decide your future. A book in the mail every month, birth to age 5, no matter where you live. That promise is being broken here. Best Beginning receives state money as designated statewide partner for this program. But statewide means all of Alaska. There are close to 100 elementary schools in the state whose kids can't get these books ever. The communities without coverage are not random. They are rural. They are remote. They are my district. If we were going to appropriate public dollars to an organization to deliver a statewide program, we should require that it actually be statewide. We are taking money from the permanent fund dividend of every Alaskan to pay into this program. They are not eligible to receive. 12 other states have done it. 12 states have passed legislation, committed funding, and achieved full coverage. Every borough, every zip code. At this time, I'll withdraw my amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Jimmy. We're going to go to Amendment 56. Representative Jimmy.
I move Amendment 56.
I'll object for discussion. Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I represent 24 villages with some of the highest child poverty in the state. Kindergarten readiness at the bottom. One community in my district has this program, which is Bethel. The other 23 do not. Nearly 100 rural elementary schools in the state have no coverage. Most of these communities don't even have a public library. These are the kids with the greatest need, and they are the ones left out. The state knows this program works. DEED's own evaluation says it improves kindergarten readiness. And the impact is strongest for Alaska Native children. So we have proof it works. And a system that does not reach the children works best for. I got to get some information on where these grants go from Best Beginning as its affiliates. Fairbanks gets $25,000. Juneau gets $19,000. Soldotna gets $7,200. Homer gets $6,500. And they all have libraries. Bethel serving the entire Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta got $4,000. The state sends $320,000 a year to Best Beginnings, money that has not shown an audit, money that comes with no equity requirements, money that has not been reviewed. Money that has not been reviewed in 19 years. 87% of the Best Beginning budget comes from government funding. This is a state program with a nonprofit in front of it. Last year, tax filing, 42% of their spending, $359,000, went to six employees, more on staff than on books. Meanwhile, in Fairbanks, that same program runs with volunteers in Fairbanks, if I missed that, zero paid staff as a $63,000 budget. Over 650,000 books delivered, including to Alaska Native communities around there. We can't even deliver a full permanent fund dividend to all Alaskans. Members of my communities are paying for books for kids in urban areas with these that have access to libraries. This is cruel inequality, and that we've supported for almost two decades without question. Adinganakfash. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Allard.
Thank you. Just a little bit of clarification. The population determines how much funds each community gets based on how many kids there are that they're sending out the books. I take a little bit of heartache with its cruel and inequality, but I do support this because I don't think it's something that we need to do. So I do support the amendment. I just think some of the inequality, choice of words is I don't know. We have all sorts of individuals that live in Eagle River. So, but I do support this amendment. Thank you.
Coach Jefferson, just to clarify, kids outside of Bethel are not eligible. So that is inequality, if you ask me.
For the record, that was Representative Jimmy. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, I think Coach Jefferson, just a clarification. Appreciate the shout out, by the way, from the member from Tuxuk Bay regarding our large volunteer community in Fairbanks and how awesome they work. This amendment, I read it as the previous one that was pulled was a $320,000 reduction to the, I think, Imagination Library. This just looks like an $80,000 reduction to Imagination Library. Is that correct? That's all I have. And if it is, I'll support it. Thank you.
I think that's correct. Any other comments? Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I very much want to say thank you for the comments from the member from Tuxuk Bay. Certainly, we should be doing better for every community in terms of getting early learning opportunities, whether it's books, whether it's ILP, and that's identifying children while they're young, and other early learning things that we are missing are pre-K, and quality QRIS standards for every preschool. So there's a lot going on here, and I want to share with you, firstly, what the $80,000 represented. The $80,000 represented the increase in postage. We are meeting currently 180 communities. It is not enough. It should be statewide, just as you heard from the representative. That would make much more sense. And I support that in the future. I think that we should demand that everyone gets the same. I did hear from this community, from the Best Beginnings organization, that they used to run from 90% of their funding from the state. Now they're at less than 40% from the state. So just some clarity there. And that's as of December 2024. They've had to reduce some of their funding to communities They used to serve more communities and now have less. And this budget piece was, it wasn't meeting what I think that my community, my colleague is asking for, and that is put that $80,000 into just that community. And that's, I mean, or at least into more communities who are not receiving books. And I appreciate that effort. I wasn't looking to micromanage their work, but I do think that it's good for them to hear the message that we would like to see more. In their email, I also got information that as they were making reductions, they prioritized the communities where they had members of the early learning community who were willing to volunteer to ensure that the books got to the families. It is primarily a volunteer-driven effort that has a hub in Anchorage that coordinates all of the work with Dolly Parton. I also wanted to acknowledge that, in general, this sort of program is considered an upstream program, ensuring that our students, when they show up at 5 years old in the kindergarten, are more ready. And my colleague has already alluded to that is, has shown effectiveness. We have data around that even for Alaska. I'm also going to share that according to James Heckman, and this is for my friend who loves to hear about ROI. I want to make sure that he's well aware that we're bending the curve here with any early learning investment, that approximately for every $1 invested, $17 are saved later with regard to other interventions that are needed. So with that in mind, while I definitely hear my colleague, I would encourage folks to, instead of reducing opportunities for our youngest children, at least allow it to stay at where it presently is, which is keeping up with the inflationary costs of postage, and that's what the $80,000 was intended to do by my subcommittee. Thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. I agree. I'm happy to support the member from Tuxedo Bay for bringing this item forward. Although this is a very important program, I do understand the fiscal constraints that the state is in. A couple things I've heard from people that have participated in this program is that that there's not a clear opportunity to make sure those books are going back and redistributed. And if there is, they're not very, very well aware of it. I'd also encourage the program to exercise their ability for participating in scholarship granting organizations or similar types of grant programs that are newly available in Alaska, and that might help meet the gap. So I applaud all the volunteers that are involved with this program and many like it. Encourage more people to be involved, but I will be supporting the member's amendment.
Okay. Any others wish to comment on Amendment 56? Seeing and hearing none, Representative Jimmy in closing.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jefferson. I support paying programs for children that are eligible for all. The last time the legislator cut the funding and Anchorage municipality stood up and then fully helped restore the funding for the Imagination Library. And the state shouldn't pick and choose winner. 97% of Best Beginnings recipients have public access to libraries. And I hear the return on investment. Let the organization fundraise more than once a year. Let's invest that in communities that need it the most. Goyana.
Thank you. All right. With that, would the clerk call the roll on Amendment 56?
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Shragi.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
8 yay, 3 nay.
By a vote of 8 to 3, the committee adopts Amendment 56. So we'll go to 57. Rep. Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I will be withdrawing 57.
Okay. 57 is withdrawn. Takes us to Amendment 58, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Amendment 58 will not be offered at this time.
Could we take a brief at ease?
We've just begun. We started at 1:38.
Yeah,
because members were late to this hearing. But I will call is it a brief at ease or is it a moderate at ease?
I will say it's a brief at ease.
Okay. We're brief at ease at 1:54. Back record at 1:55. So Amendment 58 is not offered now?
At this time.
Amendment 59.
Thank you.
Can we come to order, please? Amendment 59, Representative Allard.
Thank you. I move Amendment 59.
I'll object.
Okay.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. Okay. So on this one, I want to hit the bottom line up front because I know we're all in a rush to get out of here tonight and get through our little budget here, but I'm not. I want to do a little bit of explaining here on why this needs to be cut. And I'm going to reference my notes so I get all my numbers correct. In FY26, the state of Alaska funded Head Start Agency non-federal match with $13 million appropriation. According to DEED Early Learning Report, the state provided 19% required of the 20% non-federal match in FY26, serving 17 agencies, approximately 92 communities. The nonprofit, again, I'm going to repeat that, the nonprofit Head Start agencies are currently providing only 1% of the required match in either funding or allowable in-kind contributions per federal law. This increment would increase state UGF Head Start spending to 22% during a year when there is no surplus. Given the lack of official requests, that's what I wanted to hit on. Head Start didn't even ask for this. We're just giving them money that they didn't even ask for. So that's all I have to say at this point.
Okay. They certainly asked me. Representative Galvin. And then Bynum.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Josephson. And I'm sorry that you didn't get any visitors to your office, Representative Allard, because I got quite a few. Not just from Anchorage, but also from Mat-Su, also from rural. So I'll just add that. But I'm going to, if I could, mention that the 3.756 in UGF for Head Start grants satisfies the non-state federal match, or satisfies the state federal match, rather. The amount allocated from the federal government is $67 million. With a 75% federal to 25% state match. So this makes sure that we are receiving, this is ensures that Alaska receives the full federal match. The state of Alaska needs to be increased by the 3.7 in order to get there. Historically, the federal government has supported the $67 million. However, it is uncertain how long the federal government will continue to support the match if the state of Alaska does not uphold their full match, which they have not been doing up till now. This increment, and I'll tell you, just things are changing. The federal government is looking differently at matches. And so I want to mention that this increment ensures that the federal match will be there and is in place. And we certainly don't want to lose that. We know we have capacity to add more students if we were able to get this increment in place. So I'm supportive of that. Language from statute states that the Department of Education and Early Development shall make a grant to each eligible Head Start agency operating a Head Start program in the state under equal, in the state under equal to the amount or equal to the amount of the Head Start's program's non-federal contributions required under 42 USC, that is the U.S. law, 9835. Head Start promotes school readiness of children from birth to five from low-income families by providing comprehensive services in health, nutrition, and parental involvement. In Alaska, there are 17 Head Starts and early Head Start programs serving over 3,000 children across the state. With this increment, at least 140 more children will be able to be served by this program and removes the risk that the federal government will lower the amount of its match. The Senator Murkowski's annual State of the State address stated in her address, I'm going to thank the House majority here. I'll just do a shout out for calling for a fiscal restraint. Good for you, she said, because we can't count on anyone.
Point of order.
Doing.
Can we talk about the amendment? We all want to get out of here. I heard Senator Murkowski's speech too.
I'm happy to cut to it, Representative Stapp. Thank you for your concern about our timing. But I do think it's important that we state that we are concerned about the federal match, and this will hopefully alleviate that, and it will add more services to more children at a time when we know, again, that the return on investment is so far outweighs what we're investing. Even in K-12, this will save money in K-12 if we have our students more ready. So I hope that you will join me in not supporting this amendment. Thank you.
All right. I have just about everyone in the queue. So we'll start as they came, and that was Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. This is, a question. It was going to be a question to the maker of the amendment. It was whether or not this was an addition to the base, and then whether there was if this was going to be an add, if this was an add item that will now become part of the base, if there is consideration to make it one-time funding or not.
All right. The maker of the amendment is Rep. Allard. Is that who your question was directed to?
Yes.
Rep. Allard?
No, it looks like I put it as a deck. Throughout this is it's going to be gone.
Clarification,
Mr. Director Painter.
Can you?
Would
yes, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
It was
Director. Is this item in CS3 in the base? At least proposed to be in the base.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division, yes, the underlying amendment or the underlying increment is a base increment.
Okay.
And a follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice and the Chair, Mr. Painter. Thank you. And then this was an addition to what's already in the statute, or this was a – I don't have it in front of me, so I wasn't sure if this was an addition to what's already in the base or if this was a, if this is the full amount.
Director.
Through the Chair, Representative Bynum, this was an addition to what was in the governor's budget.
Thank you.
Okay. In the queue, we have Rep. Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So I've got a little story about Head Start. I was actually invited to the Head Start in Fairbanks, and I was amazed at the work that they do there. I sat and had lunch with, I think they were 2 or 3 year olds, and we were all sitting around this little table, and the 2 and 3 year olds, I couldn't believe how they were functioning. They functioned so well, and they were so well behaved, and they actually served themselves lunch. So they take a little platter. And they put it on the table, and one takes in and they scoop their own food, and then they politely pass it to the next kid at the table, and then they take their food and they scoop their own food and they pass it to me, and I scoop my own food. I'm learning from these 2 and 3 year olds how to politely pass food. And I was just amazed at the work that they were doing in the Head Start. And so I think it's a great program, and I think they're really doing a good job there. Thanks.
Thank you. Rep Stapp.
Yeah, I think Co-Chair, you know, Head Start's great. Quirk has a great program, as Co-Chair knows. It's an addition to the base. It's $3.7 million. In the event that you have a lower oil price next fiscal year, you're going to have to go and rip it out. So I don't like being the bad guy all the time, to be honest. I'm going to vote in favor of this decrement. I think Head Start, like Representative Tom Schefsky, is a great program. But people got to stop pretending like they could pay big dividends if they don't want to cut anything. So, sorry.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jefferson. I myself, growing up in rural, got to attend Head Start, and my children did too, and I seen the benefits that it did bring to our children. And I see how it helps, especially bilingual children who grew up just speaking one language and they have to learn English. That transition helps it to be easier to go into kindergarten and then throughout their high school years. And I will just say my favorite thing to do there in Head Start was to do dishes, to help the teacher do dishes. Now I don't like doing dishes. So, but I support the Head Start program, and it's a good one. Thanks.
Co-Chair Foster.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'll be opposing this amendment. I have over 20 Head Start locations, and all of them have asked me to support this increment. We actually pushed for it. The feds, they make available their federal funding each year. That varies, and with more funding comes a greater requirement that we put up more money if we're going to meet the match. It's the 20% match. And we all know that early investments have a bigger payoff and bigger returns than investments later when we invest at early childhood. So with that, I will be opposing this amendment.
And last to the queue, as far as I know, is Rep. Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. This is an amendment that I cannot support. That Sioux Valley Head Start is a really big deal. Early learning is a big deal. I got to visit, like the rep from Fairbanks did this summer, and it's an incredible place. They're working really hard with a lot of different shortfalls that they're already facing, and I don't think this is the best move for my district to be reducing funds for them right now. Thank you.
Okay. Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. It sounds like to me like there's not going to be support for this amendment to pass it. So I move to conceptually amend the amendment to make the $3,756,800 a one-time funding as opposed to an addition to the base.
Object. Rep. Allard.
I don't consider that a friendly amendment. If you want to offer and get the people a full PFD, then I suggest you vote no to this and stop playing games saying you want everybody to have a full PFD, but yet you're going to go ahead and not cut the budget.
Sounds
so
like you
I don't like this amendment.
All right. Any other discussion on the conceptual amendment? All right, that's before us. No one wants to discuss it, which is fine. So we'll take a vote on the conceptual amendment to House Bill 59. To Amendment 59.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Stapp.
Pass.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Jimmy.
No.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Schrage.
No.
Representative Josephson.
No.
3 yay, 8 nay.
By a vote of 3-8, the conceptual amendment proposed to Amendment 59 was denied, bringing us back to the original 59. I think we've had a fair amount of comment about this. I don't see further interest. So, Rep. Allard, in closing on Amendment 59.
Thank you. And I just wanted to I stand corrected. I said it provided 19% of the required 20%. It's actually 16. Somebody had sent me a message that that needed to be updated. But this is daycare. These are daycare for little babies between the ages of 5. I understand that I was able to be home with my children. I chose to do that. Not everybody can. I get it. But at the same time, there is no proof that and by the way, my kids could feed themselves at 2 and 3 years old. But I wanted to say there's no proof that the early learning program with Head Start says that these children are better than other children. My girls are thriving. One wants to be a lawyer. One is going to be in biochemistry. And I'm just saying that this program doesn't say that kids are better than other kids because they attended or not. I do respect and understand that this is helpful in communities. But again, I will say, don't say you want a full PFD and you're unwilling to cut. So thank you. And that's it.
Thank you. I was tempted to comment on the better than part, but I'm not going to. So will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Jimmy.
No.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Shragi.
No.
Representative Josephson.
No.
3 yay, 8 nay.
By vote of 3-8, Amendment 59 is not adopted. It was 3-8, Amendment 59. So we go to Amendment 60. This looks like the same amendment.
I apologize. It looks like Finance actually doubled the amendment. It wasn't their fault. I appreciate that. But this amendment is not going to be offered at all.
So that takes us to 61.
I'd like to move Amendment 61, please.
All right. I'll object. Rep. Allard.
Thank you. All right, this is a little bit tricky because I know that we have a lot of sensitivity in regards to certain programs, and I'm going to do a little bit of a swap here, and I'll explain why. Parents and teachers, parents as teachers reaches a small number of individuals and measures the effectiveness is based on numbers of meetings and screenings that have done their, that they have done, and there's no actual documented proof or any sort of follow-up with numbers that this particular program works. Therefore, I'm looking at redirecting this to the Child Advocacy Center, and I'm going to read their mission statement. It's just a couple of sentences, but I think it's very important we understand fully what the, and we call it CAC, C-A-K, Child Advocacy Centers do, is a place where a child and their safe caregiver can visit following a concern of serious maltreatment, such as sexual abuse, physical abuse, commercial and sexual exploitation, and or witnessing violence. At the CAC, they can receive comprehensive wraparound services such as child-friendly forensic interview, medical evaluation, investigation by law enforcement, safety planning from child protection workers, referrals for behavioral health therapy, and support to help the family navigate the process moving forward. The team coordinates together around the best interest of the child. This program only has so many individuals that are by law allowed to interview children. And I believe that they say statistically children are not going to lie if they've been touched or sexually abused unless they are coerced or convinced by a parent or an outside source. This program is important to have these individuals guide the child in being free to speak what they want to speak without being pushed. So maybe the word guide is incorrect. I want to read a couple of statistics for the Alaska Children's Alliance. Alaska consistently struggles with some of the highest rates of child abuse and neglect in the nation. 38%, one in every 2.6 births of children born in Alaska will be reported to child welfare before the age of 10. One in 7 children born in Alaska will experience an allegation of sexual abuse before their 12th birthday. Alaskan's Children's Justice Act Task Force reported that in 2023. While in an ideal world, we could prevent such egregious crimes against children, right now we need to face our reality to take steps to care for our children. I appreciate the parents teaching parents how to be parents, or parents, teachers teaching parents to be parents. We have a real issue here. We need funding in these open areas: Anchorage, Copper River Basin, Gakona, Dillingham, Homer, Juneau, Ketchikan, Cots Butte, Sitka, Tok. They're still developing. Wasilla, Bethel, Cordova, Fairbanks, Hooper Bay, Kenai, Kodiak, Nome, St. Paul, and Valdez. And Valdez can do theirs by satellite. But we really need to reallocate these funds, make sure these children get help. And this is something that's, I think, everybody could possibly agree on.
Okay. I'm going to take the liberty of speaking first on this amendment, and I oppose it. And I want to be clear why I oppose it. In FY26, because of a reduction in federal dollars through VOCA funds and violence against Women's Act funds, maybe both, but certainly one of those two, we were told that we must backfill $5.5 million. We must do that. And the legislature did that, and the governor did not veto that, and that was all well and good. That was good policy. This year, Brenda Stanfill, who's been working in this area for decades, met with me. In fact, I distinctly remember meeting with my aide, Dr. Page. I remember where we were sitting at my conference table on a Zoom. I also met with her a couple times in person. I met with her lobbyist, who I think is in the room with us. And we were told, because of further erosion in federal resources, we needed further backfill of $1.5 million. And that's in CS3. So the leading expert in the state told me they need $1.5 million. She could have, as recently as this morning, said, I was wrong, I need $2.3 million, in which case this amendment may have made some sense. But she didn't place that call. So I'm not in a position where I can master more than Brenda Stanfill what the need is. And I just have no evidence, as much as you're right about the importance of the CACs, that they need more than last year's 5.5 and this year's 1.5. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin. I'm going to support the maker of the amendment. I think... Man, life is about prioritizing, and I actually like both programs, but I think we have Stevie's place in Fairbanks. I mean, if I would imagine that Brenda Stanville, who I know very well, who also is from Fairbanks, would probably not reject an additional $800,000 going to CACs. This is a way that the maker of the amendment is trying to demonstrate prioritizing two different items, and I think child advocacy sitters is probably more important than parents' teachers, even though I like both programs. So I'm going to support it. Thank you.
Rep. Galvin.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Co-Chair Foster, I really wanted to talk on about the parents as teachers program. I think there might be some maybe misunderstanding about what it does. And also, I want to comment that I also support child advocacy centers. I think the state can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think we can manage both supporting those who are in very, very dire need of support. That would be the CACs, and we have that in place, and I'm glad that we do. And I will comment that those who are experts in treating our most vulnerable youth would like to see parents as teachers all over this state for everybody, and they think it might put them out of business quite a bit. And there's some concern about there not being any data on that, so I want to touch on that, if I may, for a moment.
Please.
So in terms of preventing child abuse and neglect, parents as teachers, families practice better home safety, have fewer maltreatment reports. Again, I'll repeat that. Have fewer maltreatment reports. A 22% lower likelihood of substantiated child maltreatment. Reduce CPS involvement and improvement of protective factors like parental resilience and children's socio-emotional competence. Nationwide data shows that almost one-third of all victims of child abuse are younger than 3 years old. More than 70% of all child abuse and neglect victims that died were under three. This program originated in Missouri. I just want to share it. At the time it originated, decades ago, it was in order to help families who were struggling because they were military families. So it was mostly for military families. It's very much a conservative, that's the only word I can say, program that was looking after our military families. And it was because we knew that families who are in distress likely need a little extra support and also a little extra knowledge around parenting and having more opportunity for engaging with other peers. So I just want to stress that this isn't a one or the other. Thank goodness we already have CACs supported. And thank goodness we are looking at also ensuring that parents as teachers stays afloat. Again, I want to tell you that all of the folks that I met with about the foster children, we spent a whole day meeting and learning about how, unfortunately, we hadn't met our audit when we were audited for what the state is doing for the children in foster programs. What we learned was that we were nowhere near meeting what we needed to meet in terms of helping families and children get the services they need. And in that meeting, I was advised, please up your game in Parents as Teachers. And that was from OCS. That was from the state of Alaska. And that is because they believe in this department, this the work of this program as well. So I will not be supporting this amendment.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I appreciate all of that information we were just provided. In all fairness, Co-Chair, I wish we would have heard that kind of information when we added these items to the budget in the CS. However, we did not. Adding these items into the budget. But with that being said, I believe that it is a good amendment. I think that when we prioritize needs, I believe that the amendment is meeting the better needs. So I'll be supporting the amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Rep. Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I'm wondering if we could hear from Legislative Finance, because my recollection is that the CACs are grant nonprofits. And I presume that even if we put more money in the budget, unless they've applied for a grant with federal monies, et cetera, they can't necessarily accept it. And I was thinking it was a year ago that we had to fight real hard at the same committee to get people to understand the important role of CACs and the ability to prosecute crimes against children in the most horrific crimes. And I want to make sure that our CACs are fully funded to their capacity, but I just want to know, because I think if we overfund it, it's not necessarily money that gets put to use, because it doesn't stand up a new center, it doesn't draw additional federal match. But if I have misunderstood it, and Ledge Finance can explain that to us.
I also see Ms. Morton here, and I don't know if she's at liberty to testify or wishes to. I know this is her lane as well. I'm not sure what – if Ledge Finance thinks that it can contribute something, I'm not sure exactly what it would be. But I see Ms. Rose joining us. Welcome, Ms. Rose.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Rose. I'm with Legislative Finance. Representative Hannon, would you please repeat your question?
Thank you, through Chair Josephson and Ms. Rose. I apologize. It was more in a word problem sort of story lane. Can you explain to us how the CACs are funded and if there were more money put into a line item allocation. Does that equally distribute amongst all of them? Are they grant funded with its match? Because my understanding is they're all nonprofits, and I don't know what, you know, if it's in excess of the money they've requested, then what? Everybody gets extra bonus, or is it money that couldn't be used, or does it open a new center?
Ms. Rose, if you know.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I would imagine that it would not simply open a new center. As you say, these are individual nonprofit groups. They certainly coordinate on a statewide scale amongst themselves and through state agencies such as Department of Family and Community Services, as well as the Council on Domestic Violence, sexual assault and violence, sexual assault, excuse me, CDVSA. However, one thing that I would note for the committee is in testimony during the subcommittee, the Department of Family and Community Services did say that they had not completely expended in FY26, which is different from the financial circumstances we've heard for FY27. That they have a couple hundred thousand, I believe, that has not fully gone out for those grants because there were centers that did not need the full amount of the grant in FY26. But I do want the committee to be aware that there are additional reductions to federal funds that are projected in FY27 that the chairman referenced as an addition in his subcommittee process this year for the FY27 budget. So I could not answer affirmatively that the money would not be able to be used in FY27, but my understanding from what the subcommittee heard in testimony from the department directly was that they would have sufficient funding in FY26 and that the additional funding was not going to be available, or funding that they had this year would not be available at the same level in FY27.
Follow up. Rep Hannon.
And to affirm from Ledge Finance's understanding what the chair, thank you, Chair Josephson, has said, the full request for fully funded CACs is in the committee substitute that's already been adopted both at the subcommittee level and then by this body prior to this amendment being considered, that it's the CAC's request for FY27 is fully funded.
If that's the sort of thing you know. It's the sort of thing I know, but I don't know if it's the sort of thing you know. Ms. Rose.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I would defer to the chair on that as I do not receive those visits, so I could not say distinctly.
One thing I would add, thank you, Ms. Rose, for the committee is, in these meetings, to further refine and offer my impression, when I met with Ms. Stanfill with CDVSA, and I don't think CDVSA's principal area of work is necessarily the child advocacy centers, but she was seeking an increase to DV shelters of X dollars, an increase, and I think it was $1.5 million, an increase for attorneys who could no longer do the work completely for free. They could do it at a discount work. And the work is domestic violence-related work of $500,000. And then $1.5 million for CACs. So my memory is not just about the $1.5 million. It's about this three elements that were sought by on behalf of the members who make up CDVSA. Actually, Ms. Morton, can you join us, please? Would you place your name on the record?
Sure. My name is Laurie Morton. I'm the Deputy Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Ms. Morton, am I right when I say that your colleague, Ms. Stanfill, requested $1.5 million additional state dollars for child advocacy centers.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything more that she or you have been asked for relative to child advocacy centers?
No, sir.
Any questions for members? Rep. Allard.
It's Ms. Morton?
Yes.
Okay, so the funds that I'm trying to reallocate to you guys, you just don't want it to help with further any type of CAC issues?
Ms. Morton.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, we don't represent the child advocacy centers. We represent the domestic violence sexual assault programs, mm-hmm. some of which also hold the child advocacy centers. I don't think it's that they wouldn't want extra funds. I think the 1.5 is what is necessary to be able to appropriately fund them for FY27. I wouldn't put that in the negative. We're working hard to be able to maintain services. The 1.5 that we asked for shelters was not appropriated. Only 1.2 was. So we're thankful that the child advocacy centers have the 1.5.
Thank you. All right. Rep. Allard, would you like to wrap up on Amendment 61?
Yeah, I just wanted to say so the 1.5 could technically be cut, correct, at any point from the UGF later on by another body?
As I understand it, there are two opportunities for a member of the House to cut it.
Okay.
This one and on the floor. It then goes to conference committee. I don't know what the other body's position is on.
Just wondering that because I'd like to see if we could still reallocate this. All right. I just appreciate Representative Hannon for bringing us that reminder of what was going on last year. And I've kind of opened my eyes to a little bit of this, but I see there no problem trying to fund more towards the issues. We have the highest rate in the country of these type of issues with the CAC and what they talk about with their children. So I was tempted to withdraw it, but as a mom and a representative for an organization that sees abused children regularly to say, no, we don't need it, I'm going to override and say, you do need it. I know what's going on in the state of Alaska, so I'm still going to keep my amendment there, and I hope you'll vote yes for our children.
Okay. Will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 61?
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
No.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Shragi.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Josephson.
No.
5 yea, 6 nay.
So by a vote of 5-6, the committee fails to adopt Amendment 61. We'll move to Amendment 62. Representative Stapp.
I will not offer 62 at this time.
Okay. 62 not offered now. Taking us to Amendment 63, Representative Moore.
Thank you. I will not be offering 63 at this time.
Okay. 63 will not be offered now. And Amendment 64, Representative Jimmy.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease, 232.
All righty. We're back on record at 2:35 in the Al Adams room. House Finance, House Bill 263. The next amendment is 64. Representative Jimmy.
I move Amendment 64.
I'll object for discussion. Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. This amendment uses spill prevention and response funds to pay for the spill prevention and response facilities. The rest of this appropriation was moved to this fund. Every bit of money helps when we make a budget for Alaskans, even just $30,000. I am putting my money where my mouth is and looking for general fund savings everywhere I can.
Comments or questions? I don't see any.
Yeah.
Rep Staff.
Yeah. Reading the description of the amendment. Okay, so maybe I might need Director Painter briefly, because we're getting a deposit from Flint Hills is the thing, and the statute has that fund capitalized at a certain amount, and I thought the CS took the money out of the SPAR. So where are we? What is the effect of the amendment, I guess, for the fund capitalization of the SPAR would be the question.
The CS took some of the funds. Director Painter? Good afternoon.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division, through the chair, Representative Stapp. So the committee substitute draws one-time $10 million balance, or has a one-time $10 million draw. It also, there was a fund source change in the subcommittee of $1.968 million, I think it was, for the SPAR division, Spill Prevention Response Division. This adds another $30,000 to that. The Flint Hills settlement was something like $24.5 million. So combined, those are about half of the settlement.
All right. Works for me.
So is this as simple as it looks, Director Painter? Even subtracting the $10 million that our version of the bill takes from the Flint Hills settlement and the SPAR capitalization, I guess, this would require the SPAR division to pay for its rent out of this oil and hazardous fund. Is it that?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
All right. And I know I've seen this spreadsheet. I think your office produced it, but I am getting correspondence about this, so I want to know. Even as CS3 has been written and removed $10 million of the sulfalane settlement, SPAR remains enriched over its previous position. Is that accurate? And can you, how enriched is it?
Mr. Chairman, I think we have kind of, unfortunately, dueling fund tracking versions on this particular fund. The legislative finance version assumes investment income, based on the prevention response funds are both invested with Jafonzi, which is expected to earn 3.15%. And the prevention account receives the investment earnings from both the prevention and response fund. So historically, the last few years, that's been about $3.6 million because investment returns for that's been a little higher than standard. If we assume the 3.15%, our fund tracking shows that with the $10 million draw, the SPAR account should be remain solvent for at least the next decade or so. The department's version that doesn't include investment income shows the balance declines more quickly. So the larger the balance, the more can earn investment income. So like in our version of the tracking that includes investment income, pulling money out contributes to it going down faster, but the department doesn't account for that investment income at all.
Okay. Any other questions about Amendment 64 for the director? I don't see any. I don't see any other questions. Thank you, Director. Representative Jimmy, in closing. Oh, thank you. I will remove my objection. Seeing no further objection, the committee adopts Amendment 64 unanimously without objection, as they say.
So we'll go to Amendment 65, Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin. I move Amendment 65.
I'll object. Representative Jimmy.
I'm concerned about giving retention bonuses to employees without degrees and comprehensive training that report that they are overloaded, burnt out, and don't have the support they need. A retention bonus to these entry-level position in a field that is handling OCS cases is not giving our department the support that they need to handle the load of cases they receive. That's why I'd like to move my conceptual amendment to amend reverses my decrement and instruct DFCS to use the appropriated funds towards competitive and meaningful recruitment bonuses for the PSS Specialist 3 caseworkers position and distribute it in alignment with the best practices.
Okay. All right. And I think that the conceptual amendment, and I'm delighted to say this, is being delivered in a written form to the members, which makes my life easier. And I thank you for it, Representative Jimmy.
Darn it.
Yeah. All right. I'll treat that as an April Fool's comment. So let me just let the members read this for a moment on record here.
Co-Chair Josephson, just for clarity, is this conceptual amendment to include both these parts that are being that are listed here in this document? Is that what I heard?
Representative Jimmy.
It is to take...
To clarify, this is all being done through one conceptual yes. amendment. You're including both parts of this handout?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Just give me one moment. So I read this to mean that the decrement goes away and the dollars would move from what is sometimes called retention or bonus dollars to toward competitive and meaningful recruitment salaries or bonuses for PSS 3 caseworkers.
Correct. You're correct, Co-Chair.
All right. I'm going to object to the conceptual amendment just to keep things in line. Representative Allard, as to the conceptual amendment to the amendment.
So I was trying to understand it too. So I just want to reiterate it so I also get it, Co-Chair, and to the sponsor of the conceptual. So we have vacancy positions within this organization, and what we're doing is looking at putting in three new positions while taking the bonuses away from individuals, the $800 incentive that could actually go to their Head Start fees if they have kids. Am I getting that correct about the...
No. I understand how that was misread. There's a group of people called PSS 3s.
Yes.
But there aren't three of them. So it's just...
That's why. Okay. Yeah. So...
They're the third most skilled, apparently. They're the top tier of PSSs.
I'm having a lot today. Can you break it down, the conceptual amendment or whatever? Could somebody explain it to me again, please?
I'd like to invite my chief of staff to come up and explain.
Sure. Ms. Gunn.
Thank you. And for the record, Rachel Gunn, staff to Representative Jimmy. So what this conceptual amendment does is it takes the original appropriation as a decrement and adds that back. Now, the Protective Service Specialist 3s have degrees. As Representative Josephson said, they are the top tier. And the idea is to remove the bonus structure from the range 15s or the ones without degrees or experience handling these high load cases, high trauma cases. These guys are well trained in the field. They chose to go into the field after schooling and training, and it's hard to recruit them. But when we do recruit them, they tend to stick around because they know what they're signing up for.
Okay. Can I do?
Yes. Rep. Allard for Ms. Gunn.
Okay. Thank you. So the individuals that come into the organization to work at maybe like a range 15 or whatever they may be, we're going to take their incentives away from them and give them to individuals that get higher pay and then have a degree and have been there longer and have chosen to make it a career field?
Yes, through the chair to Representative Allard, that's exactly what we're trying to do. The idea is these PS3 positions, they tend to stay longer. When you hire somebody for this kind of work that's coming in at a range 15, and they experience burnout, a toxic work environment, the things that they tell us why they're leaving, those range 15 positions might stick around a little bit longer for a bonus, but they contribute to not as a conducive work environment for people that are dealing with these highly sensitive cases. When the state took away those requirements for degreed individuals to be entering into this field and handling the caseworkers, we saw the record burnout and record numbers quitting.
Can I ask another follow-up? Do you mind?
I don't. Oh. Rip Allard from Miss Gunn.
I'm a little bit confused because some of those people decide to go into the field, and I'm concerned that we're going to have even a worse situation because we have less people. I get that they're going to be burnt out, but we're taking money away from individuals that we really actually need. Did we check with the department to see if they were all on board and okay with losing more people because they're losing money?
Wait a minute. Let's just get our facts at least close to right.
Well, that's my opinion. I'm allowed to voice that, Chair.
No, I know that, okay. Representative. But first of all, twice you've said we're taking money away. They don't have it yet because this is a temporary budget, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So there is no money yet.
Okay.
It's up to us and the governor.
Correct.
Ms. Gunn.
Thank you. And to the chair, to Representative Allard. Yes, the idea that these are recruitment bonuses to get PS3s, those positions filled. What we've seen in the department after speaking with the department, after speaking to the incredible work that Les Guerra has done, working with Representative Joseph's team, both Representative Jimmy and I have both been either foster parents or in the foster care system. After these robust discussions, we want to, the idea with this amendment is to provide the most meaningful structural support to DFCS, which has struggled with that structural support and funding for a long time. We know we're being sued to the tune of $4 million a year, and we want to give them the tools they need to create a more robust department that serves kids better. And after all the conversations with the work that Rep. Josephson's done, with the work that his mentor, Les Guerra, has done, and speaking with the department as recently as just before this hearing, we believe that this is the most appropriate use of funds for long-term stability and results for the kids.
Okay, I appreciate the clarification. Thank you.
Rep. Stapp. Sorry. And then Co-Chair Shruggy.
Yeah, thanks, Coach. So there's just one quick housekeeping item. The conceptual amendment actually doesn't say what the decrement is going to be decremented to. It just says reduce the decrement of $260,000 in UGF to DFCS to Children's Services Appropriation and the frontline social workers allocation by $260,000 in dollars. So my assumption is we are removing the decrement from the amendment completely, and you're reallocating the money to this purpose via intent language. I just want to put that on the record. That's how I understand the amendment.
Me too, and I'm glad you said something.
Yeah. So the second thing is, I guess I don't – my only issue with the specification on the bonuses to Prospective Services Specialist 3 is it just seems relatively prescriptive for the department. Nothing, I think, in your original intent languages stops the department from just choosing to bonus those type of people at their own discretion. I like the decrement, but other than that, I mean, I just wanted to point that out, I guess. I don't understand why you need it that prescriptive, I guess, through the chair.
Ms. Gunn.
Through the chair, the Representative Stapp, after speaking with the department, we had compared the larger retention bonuses that were available to the Department of Corrections and retaining some of their obtaining some of their more experienced staff. They did feel this language was important and to be prescriptive, so they would have the authority to hire these folks and provide a bonus that might raise eyebrows in committees like these.
Okay, follow up.
Follow up.
Yeah, okay, I see where you're
Rep.
going.
Step.
Yeah, so through the chair, Ms. Gunn, how many positions are there for PS3s? Because you had said 800 in your original amendment, all of them are 327. So I'd imagine if that's all of the protective service specialists, how many threes are there actually in the budget through the chair?
If you know, Ms. Gunn.
Thank you. The record, Representative Stapp. I'm looking at the math on that amendment, and I'm trying to reverse because we had in the total 600. You'll see the next amendment that we have, the conceptual amendment. I think 600,000, around 600,000 in UGF. We divided by $8,000 per bonus to get the number, of which the math isn't mathing right now, but if I had a calculator, it'd be in that ballpark. $600,000 divided by $8,000, and then that'd be the level. 175 unfilled positions.
Okay.
Thank you for that lifeline, whoever passed that to me.
I'm good. Thank you.
Co-chair, Shroggy.
No, I think I'm okay. My questions have been answered, and I'll be supporting the amendment.
Okay, who made the objection? Oh, sorry, Rep. Hannon?
I'm going to speak in opposition to the amendment. Not that I am opposed to giving recruitment bonuses, but in an area where we have a huge number of vacancies, some of those people are lower level than I'd like to see, but they are there doing it. And to not give retention bonuses, but only recruitment bonuses, is going to discourage people who are doing it. And there are some PS3s already working. And if they don't get a retention bonus, but the next person hired in the same job is getting a recruitment bonus, that's a really bad workplace to be in. The next person in the door gets a bonus I wasn't eligible for, and I don't get one for staying at this job that is already grueling. I appreciate the concern and the perspective that we should – I wish they were all PS3s, but I think we've heard repeatedly those folks aren't coming to us already. We need to do more to recruit them. But for the few we have, giving them retention bonuses hopefully keeps them doing – what is an unfathomably challenging job. So I can't support the amendment where we're going to only give money to the new employees but not do anything for the folks who are already doing a job that is very stressed.
All right. I was going to withdraw my objection, but you have one clearly.
Co-Chair Justin, could I have my chief of staff reply to that?
Yes. Ms. Gunn.
I'm not interested in debate with the staff.
Fair enough.
But I would like to get her on record to say, to explain it.
Well, I think that issue that Rep. Hannon has just addressed was sort of explained over here, was it not?
We don't need to debate it. Like,
I think Representative Hannon's perspective is completely valid. I think I have a slightly differing approach in that. Look, I'm not an expert on this issue, but what I've heard from the committee hearings that I have had an opportunity to listen to, either in part or in full, is that a huge part of the turnover and burnout is because the caseloads are so high and there's not a lot of support. And so while there may be some disparity or unfairness in new employees getting a recruitment bonus, but the ones that are existing not getting a retention bonus, in some ways – the folks that are already there are getting a retention support, and that they, in theory, if this is successful, will have lower caseloads and therefore may have a stronger persuasion to stay in those positions. So I think we are challenged in getting these folks in the door, these more qualified individuals, and I really appreciate the conceptual amendment and the underlying amendment from Representative Jimmy. So I maintain my support for this.
All right, just to reset for the record. We're on Amendment 65. It was objected to for discussion. It was then asked, a conceptual amendment to it was proffered. That was objected to. That objection will be maintained because of there's at least one dissenter as to it. With no other comments, I'm going to call – actually, I think it's proper to go to Representative Jimmy on a closing comment on the conceptual amendment to Amendment 65. Representative Jimmy.
Yes, this. Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. But giving more support to the PSS3 positions would really help them to stay in their jobs. Like they, as mentioned, they are trained. They know what they're getting into. I've had people in this work area quit because of burnout, even if they were – and they were not qualified. Unfortunately, I have family that are in the OCS program, and I've had to work with 3 different OCS workers in 1 year, and they weren't even qualified. So I think being able to give the PSS3 financial support in this way will help them handle better caseloads in the future.
Okay. Before we call the roll, I have a question for Director Painter. I think that Representative Stapp properly clarified that reducing the decrement has the effect of having no decrement and leaving the money. And under technical or conforming changes, I assume you understand it that way. Do you need to make a comment? All right. Will the clerk call the roll on the amendment to the amendment?
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Bynum.
No.
Representative Shragi.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Five yay, six nay.
Okay. By a vote of 5-6, the committee does not adopt the amendment to the amendment, bringing us back to the underlying amendment, which is a cut to OCS as described in it. Any other comments? Rep. Allard.
Thank you. I'm not going to support this amendment. We have individuals that might not have a college degree. They might be getting a little burned out, but I don't want to go in and say you guys don't get incentives. Now I know this is the first time we're doing this. We are in desperate need for these individuals, and to say you don't get that extra $800, I just can't see that. Like, we're already talking about, we just did an amendment that I was cutting for Head Start. Now I'm thinking, well, this can help pay for their Head Start. So I want to make sure that these individuals get these dollars.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other wrap-up comments? We've already...
Co-Chair Justin, I'd like to withdraw Amendment 65.
All right. Amendment 65 is withdrawn. So we're going to go to Amendment 66. Representative Jimmy.
I would like to withdraw Amendment 66.
Amendment 66 is withdrawn.
Rep. Josephson, just a note that we've passed the halfway mark. If you assume, and this is a big if you assume that all those not offered at this time are not offered, we're past halfway.
Oh, they're coming back.
Ah, oh, darn it.
Technically, we're back. 56 was halfway.
All right. Well, there's always tomorrow. We're on Amendment 67. Representative Moore.
Thank you. I move Amendment 67.
Object. Representative Moore.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. This amendment removes the statewide media campaign to recruit foster families. It is unlikely that a media campaign of any type produces the number of new foster families to justify the expense of $350,000. A good solution would be to prioritize direct support for children and families, and I hope that the committee can support the amendment.
Representative Stapp, then Galvin.
Yeah, I think, Co-Chair, I want to thank my colleague, Rep. Moore, for offering this. I mean, she's not wrong. We do this all the time with media campaigns that have little to no ROI. We did a famous $1 million on NPR ads on syphilis, if many of those people remind that at the table. We have really no way of measuring how effective that is. And if you're going to spend the money, you should just go to support foster families, which we've done in previous iterations of the budget since I've been here. So I think it's a pretty simple cut, and I support it. Thanks.
Rep. Galvin.
Thank you. Chair Justice, and I do not support this amendment, and I'm going to clarify why. I appreciate the need to try to, hold off the costs, and I appreciate that skepticism, but I'm going to share a little bit more. The need is to get more foster families. And between the years 2018 and 2025, we lost 500 foster families. There's a lot more data on that I could give you, but I want to skip to the part that I think you might be most interested in this committee, and that is how and why this might work. I asked them specifically for some data because I knew that things like smoking cessation, the tobacco ads were very, very effective, but I had never heard of anything being effective in this area. However, a media campaign that was run let me get to the correct numbers. They ran an ad campaign post-COVID for $250,000using ARPA dollars. And from that, it brought several hundred inquiries from prospective foster parents. They used real youth in these programs. They, like I said, several hundred, and they ended up with quite a few of them turning out. They ran a few ads in January of 2022 that brought 50 new foster parent inquiries and 50 new people who signed up to be foster parent and to the orientation. The state put dollars in later to run the ads, and we don't have the data on that, but they do know that over 100 people came forward and signed up in 2 months, which is a very significant outcome. And this data is from the Alaska Center for Resource Families, facing foster care partners with ACRF, that's the Alaska Center for Resource Families, and Child Welfare Academy to create and run those ads. I want to also share that unfortunately, because we are down so many foster opportunities in homes, we're finding things like at one time they've had children staying in offices in bunk beds, and I'm looking for where those notes are. That surprised me so much. OCS put bunk beds in offices in recent years because it's a regular occurrence for children to overnight in their offices. They've seen makeshift cots in rural offices with kids sleeping covered in coats. They have a pantry of non-perishable foods like instant mac and cheese and such to make it habitable, but it's barely habitable, and likely it would not even meet their own licensing standards for foster homes. So with that in mind, I don't support that because the data shows that it's likely this could be helpful, and I've certainly heard that there's a dire need to bring more families into this system. Thank you. Into the helpful system, I should say, of bringing in foster children.
Yeah, I think the visiting children also talked about staying in hotels, which is another option, unfortunately. Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I am for this amendment because how I became a foster parent was not because I saw a commercial and said, oh, wow, I want to become a foster parent now. I became a foster parent because I was approached, because there was a need. And people get approached, whether there are social engagements, whether you're at a Yurok community or you're at church, you're at a community event, that's where it's mostly talked about. And people do reach out when they do need help in that way. Myself being a foster parent, I was not certified as one, but I took in family, and then I got asked to take in my nephew's son, which was even a bigger challenge. And it's a hard decision to make whether you want to be one or not. I mean, I wasn't influenced to become a foster parent through a commercial, so I will be opposing this amendment.
Any other comments on Amendment 67? It's pretty straightforward.
I'm sorry. I meant to, I'll support this amendment. April Fool's. No, just joking.
All right. Rep Moore in closing.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I appreciate the comments, Rep Galvin and Rep Jimmy. I think that it's really important that this money be prioritized to direct support for children and families. I think this would be better spent giving $10,000 to 35 foster parents. That's just kind of where I'm at right now. So I appreciate the support, and I look forward to seeing the votes.
Will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 67?
Representative Allard.
Ready to pass. Pass.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Can I pass again?
I don't think so.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Shragi.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
7 yay, 4 nay.
By a vote of 7-4, committee adopts 67.
Mr. Co-chair.
Yes.
Josephson. I apologize. Point of order, though. We're in the middle of a roll call, and just I don't know that it's appropriate to have conversation during roll call. And I know you're trying to answer a question of the member, but the member shouldn't be asking questions during a roll call.
I'm not your own member.
Brief at ease.
We just revoked. Are you calling me out?
Just brief at ease.
All right, let's do it this way.
I'm okay with the vote. I'm okay with the vote. I'm just, as we move forward, I think it's something we should keep in mind that dialogue during a roll call shouldn't happen.
I think we should redo the vote.
All right. I'll just keep it simple. I move that the vote be redone.
Okay.
Is there objection to my motion? Hearing none. Will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 67?
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Shragi.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
8 yay, 3 nay.
By a vote of 8-3, the committee adopts Amendment 67. Amendment 68, Representative Bynum.
Amendment 68, Co-Chair Justice, and Amendment 68 will not be offered at this time.
Okay. Amendment 69, Representative Moore.
I will not be offering 69 at this time.
Amendment 70, Representative Bynum.
Amendment 70 will not be offered at this time, Co-Chair Josephson.
Okay. Amendment 71, Representative Allard.
Oh, this is going to be good. I move amendment number 71.
Object for discussion, Representative Allard.
Thank you. This amendment, basically, I'm going to read it just down here for the public, and then I'm going to explain a little bit. It is the intent of the legislature that a department may not expand funds in excess of their funds appropriated in the budget. A department whose expenditures exceeded budget amounts at the end of the fiscal year, except those funds spent in furtherance of public safety or pursuant to declared emergency, should expect those expenses to be drawn from the department's budget for the next fiscal year. So what that is saying is, this is a good example. If Department of Corrections come to us and says they have a $3 million overtime over budget for their overtime, and they want to put it in the supplemental, by all means, we could do that. But we will take it from their next following year's budget. So what I kind of did is say, smack their hand. If you want to spend money, go ahead. But it's going to come out of your next year's budget. This is going to train our departments to stay within their budget and stop coming to us with their hand out and overspending. And I think this is a really good method of getting them to stay within their bounds and stay within their budget without wreaking havoc among their budget.
Any comments? Rep. Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I think one question is for you as the only attorney here, and then one is for the maker. One, under definitions, I believe the Department of Corrections is a public safety defined department, and their employees are considered public safety workers. I also want to know, can intent language bind our budget actions in this way? And I'm not sure if you as an attorney can address that or if that's alleged finance, but in general, what I've always heard is intent language isn't binding, it's recommendation. And this implies that we are, the next legislature would be then bound to deduct it from the following fiscal year. So, you know, potentially, well, we'll use you as an example. You won't be here next, the 35th legislature. He's already announced he's not running. So,
can always change your mind.
So can you bind us to make a deduction from the Department of Transportation who exceeded their snow removal budget from the following year? Because they're not a public safety, or if it wasn't a declared emergency.
Well, I can speak to whether, and I hadn't thought of this, but DOC, I had a bill called House Bill 55, would have given defined benefits to all public safety workers. And corrections, because I think they were peace officers, fit in that definition. They were absolutely part of the bill. So I think your point is well taken as to DOC, that it wouldn't do what the maker of the amendment wishes. We cannot bind the 35th legislature. We can't really bind the next governor. Of course, this governor will offer the FY27 budget in the first instance. I don't think we can really say you've got to subtract this because your department's misbehaved. And he wouldn't know that until June of next year anyway. So I don't know. If the director wants to talk about this, here's what I've identified. I'd love to see if the director agrees with me. There are times when departments absolutely do their level best to follow our intent, and they actually do it. And there are other times where they just don't.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease at 311. Back on record, my comments about my understanding of the law are made as a legislator with a law degree who's done a lot of work in criminal justice, but I haven't researched it. Director, would you like to come forward?
He's allowed to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division, also not an attorney.
Say that again.
Not an attorney.
Right. Okay. Let's remember where we are. Okay. Director, what is your impression of this language in the wordage section?
Mr. Chairman, intent language cannot bind the legislature or the administration. It's an expression of the legislature's intent, which, you know, by its definition, it's what we are saying we want, not requiring of it. To require something, we'd have to pass substantive law. And as the chairman said, departments often do try to comply with our intent to the best of their abilities. They don't always do that when the governor or the leadership, you know, disagrees with the intent. Sometimes they do not comply. Something like this, where it's asking for a change in budget practices, it's saying that this legislature intends to do something, and then the next legislature can say, we will do that. We will follow that intent and reduce those budgets, or it could not do that, but that would be up to that legislature. The point of this intent language, as I understand it, is to declare this legislature's intent, and then the next legislature can choose to act on that or not.
Rep. Allard.
More of like a resolution versus a bill.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Mallard, I think that's a fair characterization. You know, when we put in legislative intent, we're really giving direction. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's directed at the Office of Management and Budget because they manage the statewide agencies. But in some ways, it's really directed to the next legislature. But it's just declaring the intent of this legislature.
Follow up?
Yeah. So I would look at this as an encouragement. And everybody should just vote yes.
Okay. Is that your closing statement?
Yeah, I'm good. If anybody else doesn't have a comment, we could just move on.
Did I interrupt anyone else's comments in that respect? Will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 71? Thank you, Director.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Pass.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Schrage.
No.
Representative Josephson.
No.
5 yea, 6 nay.
By a vote of 5-6, committee does not adopt Amendment 71. We'll go to Amendment 72. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Just on Amendment 72.
I'll object for discussion.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to call this zero-based budgeting 2.0 amendment. Last year, the committee passed a very similar intent language amendment. We asked the OMB director to basically look at one department to at least one department to start being able to break down their budget programmatically and justify their expenditures, i.e. start from zero. Just to recap, the OMB director came back to the Finance Committee and said, hey, we didn't do this because we felt like you guys didn't give us enough guidance, and we didn't work with Ledge Finance, and we didn't have enough time, and then they didn't ask for any resources. So I decided to work with all of them again this year to better craft a tighter definition, give more time, and hopefully get the Legislative Financial Division on page with the OMB director. I realize that the amendment is for FY28, which I know is in 2 years, and it would be a different governor and a different legislature, but I do think it's important that we continue to kind of stress the fact that we should want transparency in programmatic funding. And next year, next budget, if I am fortunate enough to be back here at the finance table, I will try to ensure that the same conversation continues. And that's all I have.
Co-Chair Foster.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I support this amendment. When I first came into the legislature now 17 years ago, I asked about this, and I think it's a good idea. I'm really appreciative that Representative Stapp has done some work in terms of working with the administration to help them make this happen and make it a reality, and so I'll be supporting it. Thank you.
Other comments? Rep. Galvin.
I just rise with a question to the maker of the amendment. I do remember the department kind of frustratingly telling us they didn't get to it, and they also shared that they would need resources. It would take a lot of hours. I'm just wondering this, I don't see any price tag on this, and if you could share that, did OMB say this would work because it gives us more time, or did they say we'd need more resources?
Rep. Stapp.
Thank you, through chair to Rep. Galvin. Great question. So they didn't submit anything. They might need resources, but my hope is that they'll come ask the next legislature and say, hey, if we want to actually do this, this is the kind of support that we need. And then we would just make the determination at that time if they did have a funding request, right?
Follow up, if I may. Yeah, typically, if we have an idea going into the budget, we try to know, a ballpark. So I'm struggling because I want to support this, but I also like to, just be frank about it in terms of what it would cost. And I actually would likely entertain whatever the cost is, because I think it's good to know. That to go through this exercise, there's been a lot of discussion around that from some of my constituents as well, just wanting to see more transparency. So I guess I would ask you to consider figuring out something in terms of a dollar figure for this. Thank you.
Co-Chair Schrage.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I plan to support this amendment. I think two concerns that exist out there. One is implementation. I have a little bit of concern that we'll have a gubernatorial election this fall, and someone new will certainly be stepping into that role and just trying to understand what's before them. But with a July 1, 2028 date, I would think that they'd have a little bit of time to get their feet underneath of them and then begin working on this. Also, it's intent language, so ultimately, if they decide that they don't want to pursue this, then that's their prerogative, and we have no recourse in that situation. On the money side, I think similarly, I think there is some legitimate concern there, but with a July 1, 2028 deadline, even if they weren't to start into this process until next year, there's plenty of time for them to request the funds and support necessary to carry this out. And I do think it would be a good exercise for the state to try and zero base one of these departmental budgets. So some concerns there, but I think the long horizon on this probably helped to mitigate those concerns, and I will be supporting this amendment. Thank you.
Clarification, please.
Yes, Rep. Galvin.
Thank you. I think you mentioned one department, and I want to make sure, is this just for one department again, like last time, or is it at least one, and preferably more?
Yeah,
Rep. Staff.
Yeah, through the chair to Rep. Galvin. It says at least one department, but you guys got to assume that the folks will do the least amount of work required, I imagine. So.
Rep. Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I support this amendment. I think zero-based budgeting is a great way to hold every dollar accountable, and it really is a good way to look at the budget, see where you have waste, and create efficiency in. And so I hope that our departments can do that, and I think it would be a good thing. Thank you.
Rep. Allard.
Yeah, I agree with zero-based budgeting, but what I don't agree with is telling the executive branch what to do, just like I don't want them telling me what to do. So I'm not going to support this amendment.
Okay. Rep. Jimmy.
Thank you, Coach. It's just one quick question. Did you say one department or all departments? One. Thank you.
Any other comments? I guess... I don't think there's much harm that comes from this, but if you took, for example, if this building were a department of government, and it almost is, as we know, and you asked, why are we all here? What's our purpose? You would quickly, and you started with nothing, you would quickly realize that our chef needs staff. The floor needs pages. Legislators need aides. The building needs snow plowing and maintenance, and you'd quickly sort of rehire everyone because everyone's pretty busy. I'm not sure what we get from that. That might vary by department, but I'll let you close now, please.
Thanks, Coach Josephson. Actually, you know, if you try to break programmatic funding down this way, it actually does cut both ways. So I come from a perspective of looking at wasteful things to reduce, but you're also going to discover, if you go through the methodology, that there might actually be things that you legitimately need to resource more, right? So just because you're looking at expenditures individually, you could very well find that, hey, this is actually a critical place that the state is not funding, and we should look at that. So that's why I would encourage people to support the amendment.
All right. If I objected, I remove my objection. Is there other objections to Amendment 72? There's an objection. Will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 72?
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Schrage.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
10 yay, 1 nay.
By a vote of 10 to 1, committee adopts Amendment 72. Amendment 73, Co-Chair Foster.
Yes, thank you. I move Amendment 73.
Checked.
We have a motion and an objection. Co-Chair Foster.
Okay, thank you. This amendment restores the Alaska Heating Assistance Program. The legislature created the program in 2008. In 2016, the executive branch stopped funding the Alaska Heating Assistance Program in its budget. However, the program is still on the books. It's in statute. There is no need to recreate it. When the program was operational, it provided energy assistance to low-income families in both rural and urban areas of Alaska. Assistance can be used for heating oil, natural gas, propane, kerosene, wood, and electricity. If a family rents a place, then assistance can go toward rent. As to eligibility, folks have to make it less than 225% of the federal poverty level. And so for a family of two, that would be about $5,070 a month, which comes to about $60,000, $61,000 a year. Alaskans were squeezed financially by energy costs back then. There was a need for this program back then. And today, you know, we see things are getting worse in terms of what's happening on the energy front. Today, the cost of Alaska North Slope crude just in the past month has gone from about $65 a barrel to about $105 a barrel. And, of course, that's due to the war in the Middle East. And I think we're all seeing the prices, you know, trickling down in terms of what we pay at the gas station, what we're paying for home energy bills. And so payments are determined by a point system. So in one example that we came up with, a family living in a two-bedroom home, making less than $60,000 a year, when oil averages currently what it's at, which is $105 per barrel, just based on that example, the payment would be about $4,100 per year when you inflation adjust what was paid back back then. And so the total cost of the program on average when the program ended in 2016, five-year average for the last 5 years of the program, is about $12.5 million. And so if you inflation-proof that number to today, it would be about $17.5 million. And this includes three people to help the Division of Public Assistance to run the program. So with that, that is my amendment, and it looks like we have some questions.
Yes, Rep. Bynum, then Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair to the maker of the amendment. Was there any other programs that actually went into place or filled the gap when this program stopped operating?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bynum. The question, was there anything else that was filled in? No, but I would like to make 2 points. Number one, there is concurrently another program, which is a federal program, so low-income heating assistance program. That program was in place back then when the Alaska Heating Assistance Program was in place. This program, I saw it as being a supplement to the federal program, so you do have two similar programs. So there is that. And then the other thing I would say is in terms of was something else filled in to fill the gap? No, at least not to my knowledge. But one thing that went away that was in place back then was the full permanent fund, and that kind of helped. So in 2016, this program went away, and then what made things worse was the fact that starting in 2016, the permanent fund dividend started being reduced for the first time from a full PFD. And so I would say that things have gotten you know, considerably worse for low-income folks who are trying to pay their heating bills. So,
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I support Amendment 73. As we all know, the storm Haylong happened and hit communities, villages really hard, and people amped up using diesel out there to dry out their homes, dry out their installations, try to save what they could with their homes and rebuild what they could, those who weren't evacuated. And then here comes the cold snap. Now you got the whole state of Alaska dealing with fuel shortages and other communities' generators going out, and people are literally sawing their houses just to keep them warm. And who knows what else they're burning. But I really thank the maker of the amendment in showing the support for the whole state of Alaska. Oh, yeah.
Rep. Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I'm very supportive of this. I do have a question. As you're looking at the 225% of, it sounds like, federal poverty, and anyone who is below that then receives some support, did you also look at the demographics to know if we have roughly the same number-ish of people who meet that category of poverty, or is there more? I'm concerned that this is not enough money. I appreciate that you looked at inflation proofing the 12.5 that it was previously when the program was operating, but I'm not sure if we also need to look at the number of recipients who who may be eligible and whether or not that has changed demographically.
Co-Chair Foster.
Yes, thank you. In terms of whether or not more or less people would be eligible from 2016 as opposed to today, I don't have that number. What I can say is I know that in looking at my own district, about two-thirds of the people would qualify. Whether or not more or less would qualify, I couldn't say. One thing that I wanted to add, what was it? It'll come back to me. But, I don't have that statistic.
Great. And a follow-up is
follow-up.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing that it's covering not only to keep folks in poverty warm, but I think I heard you say also it would assist with rental if someone is about to lose their home. Did I hear that right?
Co-Chair Foster.
I didn't say anything about folks losing their home, but if somebody does rent a place and they don't own a home, then they could still apply this towards their rent. And that's in statute, to my knowledge.
Thank you.
Okay. Rep Stapp, then Allard.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So just a few clarifying questions, if you can. So yeah, obviously there's a federal program, LIHEAT, this goes up to 150% of Alaska FPL. So I wasn't around when we used to have this program, but I would imagine because you said 225% of the poverty line that this is the delta between qualifying for LIHEAP and then this. So that would actually make sense why it's not that big of money because you're looking at a kind of group of people. My second question would be the three personnel that you have in the amendment, are they required to be put into DPA? Because I would imagine if the program's still on the books, they probably still have it in their systems, but I don't know if we looked at any of that. And my final thought is, this is basically another form of energy relief. And I think if we're going to go into another winter with mega high oil prices, it's probably going to be very difficult to pay bills this winter and fall. Through the chair.
Rep, there was a query if you want to respond.
Okay, I think the last comment I think was more of a comment. As the prices go up, it's going to be difficult for people to pay their bills, and that was just a comment, or was that a question?
I had just two questions, Co-Chair. Second one was the three personnel, if we know we need them, and the 250,000 personal services line. And question one was, is this because of the different FPL, is that this the delta between LIHEAP and the state program?
Co-Chair Foster.
Okay. With regard to the three people, and I believe the question was whether or not they had to be in Division of Public Assistance, I would certainly leave that up to the administration. How we get to the result is wherever they end up being. I'm certainly open to moving those folks around. As to the first question, under the federal program, which is a low-income heating assistance program, you had mentioned that the eligibility is anybody 150% or below on the federal poverty level. And then under the state program, eligibility is for 225%. And I wasn't quite sure what the question was there, but what I would comment and just say that we all know that the cost of living in Alaska is higher. And so I think going back to – I didn't look to see what the original intent behind that was, but I would imagine it's because Alaska has a higher cost of living. And yes, I don't know if that answers your question, though.
You need to do a quick clarifying.
Rep Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. My staff had just sent me the statute, and the statute for the program actually governs price points per oil and per barrel already. So that makes sense of how they would calculate it. Thanks.
Okay. Rep. Allard.
Thank you, and this is to the maker of the amendment, Representative Foster. I'm a little bit concerned. I have 4.6% of low income in Eagle River, which equates to about 1,267 individuals, families that would qualify. So I guess, how do I know that they're even going to be touched by this? Because I kind of on the same page as that I'd like everybody to have some sort of energy relief. And I don't know this is going to touch people who, even though they might make a little bit more, they're in Eagle River based on the medium income. I mean, I don't know which communities are going to access this more than others. And is that fair to individuals that are still struggling in some of the urban areas too? Could you kind of help me wrap my head around how we do that?
Chair Foster.
Yes, no, actually, I do love this question because I would love for this to be able to apply to everybody. Yeah. If there's a way we could do that, that was acceptable to everybody in terms of the dollar amounts. Just to clarify very quickly, and I think you understand this, but it is that both the program, rural and urban, are eligible. And I think you know that, but I just wanted to clarify that for the public. And then also in terms of, you had mentioned you've got a much smaller percentage of folks in your district that would qualify. And is there a way that we could maybe make this more universal? Is that correct?
I have 1,200 over. Thank you. I have just over 1,200 folks. Mm-hmm. And then this is only 17 million. So wouldn't it just be better to do an energy relief for everybody in the state?
Co-Chair Foster.
I would be open to a potential conceptual amendment doing either this or both programs, but it's been done in the past. I believe under Governor Palin, we did such a thing. I think it would probably take a little bit of modeling and discussion, but certainly not opposed to it.
Okay. Are there further comments about Amendment 73? Rep. Hannon.
Thank you. I'm going to speak in favor of Amendment 73. I'm not opposed to all Alaskans getting energy relief, but I want to make sure that we are addressing the poorest Alaskans first, and at the risk of overshooting our goal and maybe not having enough money to fund energy relief for every household in Alaska, I want to make sure I'm very supportive of a program that is targeted at the poorest Alaskans and between the federal and the state eligibility. I don't see it as discriminatory between rural and urban Alaska. There are many urban Alaskans who are extremely poor and will be able to achieve the qualifications for energy relief. And so I'm going to be in support of Amendment 73.
Rep. Galvin, question for the maker.
Thank you. Yes, my question, Rep. Foster, is given that we don't know if the demographics have changed, I'm still pondering whether 17.5 is enough. And I wondered if we stick with the 225 of poverty level, don't change that. But if we added more in to the 17.5 and then said up to whatever that number is, you know, so that if there ended up being, instead of it being 2,000 people, let's say it's 3,000. And so there would be enough funds in the pot to support all of those in Alaska who are at 225 of the federal poverty level. It's just a thought whether, and I'm putting that out there because I would support it if we said up to, and of course it would be only those who would meet those requirements. Just to ensure that we're not leaving people out in the cold.
All right, Rep. Stapp.
It's probably really pertinent if we read the statute of how the funds are appropriated, Mr. Co-Chair, if I could, really quickly.
Sure.
Yes.
Thank you for doing it. Rep. Stapp.
Yeah, the statute that governs this, Section 47-25-623, probably the thing that actually really matters here is how the department appropriates it. That's Section C. It says the Department of Health shall calculate the base amount of the Alaskan affordable heating payment for the individual based on points determined under B of this section. And it says, and the average price of a barrel of Alaskan North Slope crude for sale on the United States West Coast during September through February of the preceding fiscal year as follows, right? And it starts at $75 per barrel. So I don't know if you have someone from the health department, but the way I read this is the preceding fiscal year is the one that we are currently in, and oil was not 75 from September to February. So I don't think you would be appropriating this money this year based on how the statute reads, unless I'm reading it wrong through the chair.
Co-Chair Foster.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I hesitated in bringing the paperwork and complicating this, because in or every single application is going to be different. And Representative Stapp's 100% correct. There are actually four different levels. So if oil is below $75, then there shall be paid, I believe it's like $130 per point. And how do you determine these points? And then before I get to the points, the next category was between $75 and I think $100 per barrel. And then you get $10 more per point. And then between, you know, that, so, and then the top level is if oil is over $150 per barrel. And so you're also right that we're, you know, the prior year is what would dictate what the per barrel, amount is. And so, right now, even though today we're at 105, that was just purely an example that I threw out a little while ago, but, if you're going off of the prior year's numbers, then assume it's between, well, it might not even be between 75 and 100. It's below 75, so it was in the $60 range. So you're right, that's what it would be. But going back to the points thing, it's complicated because you get different points for the different, like you're going to get, even if you're a family of four, and you're in Savunga, you're going to get a different number of points as you are a family of four in Nome or Kotzebue or, you know, Wasilla or wherever. And then there's also, do you have an elder in the house? Do you have disabled folks in the house? So anyway, it gets really complicated really fast. And you raise a good point, which is even though you're eligible, everyone's going to still get a different amount, number one. Number two, going back to your question about, or I think you're making a point about what would the total cost of the program be today. And I just kind of assume that back in 2010 to 2015, the last 5 years that this program was in effect, we didn't see oil that was over $100 per barrel. It was probably, you know, somewhere below that. And so I didn't think about adjusting the total cost of the program to be more than $100 per barrel. I just figured the number that we used back then was probably about what we could use today. And so I didn't make any changes on that part. So anyway, try not to complicate things. I think that's getting a little bit wordy and I'm sorry for that. So,
yes. Follow up, Rep Staff.
I don't mean to harm that. So the only concern I have, Co-Chair, is the way I read the way the money is supposed to be appropriated, and I don't know if Rep Jefferson just looked at the statute too, is it's only appropriates at a certain level of oil price in the previous winter, basically. And if I look at the previous winter, it would appear to me that we wouldn't actually be appropriating money in 27. That's my concern, if that makes sense.
But it's at C1. C1 says $130 point when the average price is not more than 75.
Okay, I misread that.
So there's always going to be some appropriation.
Okay.
Rep Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair to the maker of the amendment. My understanding would be we are going to, you appropriate a sum of money here, and in this case it's $17,500,000 to the program. The program then dishes the money out based on the statutory language in the program established. So this will be first come, first serve, would be my understanding of the program, and would only expend the monies that would be available in the account.
Co-Chair Foster.
In terms of whether or not it's first come, first serve, like, for example, if the money runs out and then somebody at the end tries to come in and qualify for that, I don't know the details of how the program actually, you know, accounting wise, is it first in, first out or whatnot. But what I can say is right now the program pays out based on this point system. And what we did was we said, okay, because I thought, well, gosh, are we going to have to change, statutorily change some of these numbers to account for inflation? And we were told by the department that, and they would pay out pro rata. So I guess your question is more towards like if there's not enough, but I guess kind of what I was wanting to add, and I don't really know the answer to that, but what I did want to add is we're adding more money, and they said that they would pay out on a pro rata basis so that back then, if in 2016, if they're eligible for $2,000, well, today it's inflation adjusted, it would be $2,500, and they would just pay out on a pro rata basis. Your question about what if the program runs out of money, that's a good question. I don't have the answer to that. We might have an answer though, if it's allowed.
Director Painter,
Mr. LeBoule.
Oh, Mr. LeBoule, Paul LeBoule. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul LeBoule, staff director, Representative Foster. Yes, the language in the statute does allow for pro rata payments if the appropriation is insufficient for the number of applicants.
Thank you. All right. Question, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, I really appreciate the co-chair for bringing this. The statute is just way too cumbersome to reanimate a program, so I'm just going to be a no, and hopefully can just do some sort of energy relief waterfall later. That's all I have to say.
All right. I think I'm going to go to the co-chair for wrap-up. I would say, though, for the record, that it's marked in exhibit, or rather Amendment 73, is Alaska Heating Assistance Program, but the statute says Alaska Affordable Heating Program, and I hope that that's sort of a technical and conforming change type of item. The Article 4 says Alaska Affordable Heating Program. I'm going to support this. I just wouldn't want someone to say, oh, you marked it as something else when our intent was for the program in our Article 4 at AS 4725. So I think I've made that record. Co-chair Foster in wrap-up.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to say that I do agree that the payment and determining the amount of payment, it seems like it's complicated. However, this program was in statute and was operating for a number of years in the past, and it didn't seem to be an issue. And so I think it's totally doable. All the statutes that are required are already on the books. It's just a matter of funding it. And so I know that at a time when we all see that energy costs are rising, it's important that we try to look out for folks who are most in need, and especially now. So with that, I would ask for folks' support on Amendment number 73.
Will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 73?
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Schrage.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
6 yea, 5 nay.
By a vote of 6-5, the committee adopts Amendment 73. This committee will be at ease until 4 p.m. 4 p.m. We're at ease until 4 p.m.
All right, we're back on record at 4:10. I don't mean to clog up our record with mundane housekeeping. I think there were some requests. Let me go at ease briefly. 409. All right, House Finance is back on record at 4:10 on Wednesday, April 1st. We're going to work a bit more and then take a dinner break. I may have, hopefully, the staff that is working on that will have our dinner ready, I guess. I don't know. But at any rate, there will be a break at around 5. So when we last were here, we had just finished Amendment 73. Takes us to Amendment 74, Representative Jimmy.
I move Amendment 74.
Is there an objection to Amendment 74? Seeing and hearing none, it's adopted.
I did object.
Oh, all right. I didn't hear it. We have an objection to 74, Representative Thomas. First, the amendment, Representative Jimmy.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Well, the good news is that we all care about our elders, the senior funding the senior benefits. The bad news is the Department of Health Subcommittee and the Governor's Office both submitted it at the same time, so this is a double increment. And I was moving that we... This amendment removes the double funding for senior benefits that happened, and our seniors will still be funded what they needed.
Is your objection maintained?
If we could get Ledge Finance to just
sure.
Reiterate
Director what Panther. Happened. Welcome back.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division, and through the Chair, Representative Tomaszewski. Yes, so the subcommittee had added $1,125,000, which was the amount of the governor's supplemental for that purpose. And then on March 13th, the governor came out with an amendment for a slightly larger amount for FY27, and the committee substitute added that in along with all of the other governor's amendments submitted on that date. However, that one was duplicated, so this item is now unnecessary, the original subcommittee add.
Okay, thank you. So a follow-up.
Yes,
so follow this up. Doesn't reduce the funding for the senior benefits.
Director Painter.
That's correct, an error.
Through the Chair, Representative Tomaszewski, it does reduce it, but it reduces it to the amount the governor requested.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Is your objection maintained?
No, I remove my objection.
Are there other objections to Amendment 74? Seeing and hearing none, the committee adopts 74. Amendment 75 may be redundant of 74.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Jefferson. We'll be withdrawing that. 74 takes care of 75.
All right. 75 is withdrawn. The Chair will move Amendment 76.
Object.
I think there's a document being distributed. Last year, the supporters of senior centers and the programs they offer asked me for something in the range of $3 million. It might have been $3.1 million. The legislature, led largely by my work,
added $2.5 million for the senior center, senior centers. The Alaska Commission on Aging this year came to my office and noted that the, and I'll just read this, I'm reading a document called Senior Grant Services Increases. It says the legislature approved $2.5 million increase for senior center services funding last year, but $1.2 million of that increase was directed to senior center transportation, nutrition, and support services. Providers report that this funding level has not kept pace with rising food and labor costs, inflation, workforce shortages, and increased demand. In the prior budget cycle, advocates including AARP, Alaska, and AgeNet requested $3 million. So you then have a letter from dated yesterday from AgeNet clarifying that they would like to have an increase of $700,000. The Alaska Commission on Aging suggests that it's closer to the amount needed is closer to $500,000. But you can see some of the same issues brought up in the letter I've had distributed to you from Marianne Mills of AgeNet. She notes that we have the fastest growing senior population, that they promote the most effective, cost-effective, and humane way for Alaska to care for its oldest citizens in nutrition, transportation, and support services, or NTS, that these grants go to 32 nonprofits. They help provide much-needed food in home deliveries and group settings. You can read this, of course, yourselves. Rides for seniors to get to medical appointments, shopping, senior centers, etc., and safety checks and additional services designed to protect health and safety. And, of course, a lot of these dollars help reduce the need for seniors to be in more regulated, intensive housing, often either public or otherwise. So this allows people to operate independently and freely of some possibility of institutionalization. They note that they, in the same letter, they're not expanding the program, but in order to maintain the current services and meet the continued increased demand for Alaskans to live in their homes, as I noted, and community of choice, they need an increment. So I'm offering this amendment. It strikes me that if there was an amendment to this amendment reducing the amount from 700,000, as noted in Amendment 76, to 500,000, that would be deemed friendly by me and at least consistent with what the Alaska Commission on Aging requested. So that is why I've offered this amendment. Representative Stapp.
Just to clarify, are you making a conceptual amendment, Chair?
I could. I mean, I'm certainly inviting anyone else to. And I don't see anyone doing it, so I'll conceptually amend my own amendment to reduce the amount from $700,000 to $500,000. Is there an objection to my... Okay. Would you like to speak to your objection?
I will. And I guess I'm going to, as much as I respect the Alaska Commission on Aging, it's not one of the direct delivery service agents. And I know that the program and senior program in Juneau that does Meals on Wheels has increasing fuel costs for the vans. All the volunteers cost nothing, but the food costs for that they do, the senior rides that they do, all have increasing costs. So when I look at AgeNet, who is part of representing the direct service delivery programs, I view that as a more accurate number. Now, I'm sure that in this tight budget, they'd rather get 500,000 than zero. But if I don't hear a lot of objection to the 700,000, I am more inclined to make sure that my Meals on Wheels and my senior rides programs are funded at a level that they can continue to provide those for seniors so that they are on the lowest continuum of care, because these are folks that with these assistants can continue to live quasi-independently in their own homes or in supported senior housing projects. We've got a couple around town, and I'd like to see that.
Rep Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I concur with representative from Juneau, because when they came to visit me, what I learned about with their trimming down of Meals on Wheels in particular was that we stand to be spending as a state much more money in other ways, particularly healthcare. They explained that one day in the hospital is, which is around $75,000 for somebody who is malnourished, is much, much more cost than a whole year's worth of Meals on Wheels. So I want to make sure that we're funding Meals on Wheels. So I'm pro this particular underlying amendment, and I'm against the conceptual.
Rep Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. To the maker of the amendment, I'm just wanting to know, and maybe it was said and I didn't hear it, and I apologize, what is the total amount that's being spent on this program already? This was an initial, or this is an addition of $700,000. This conceptual amendment is to reduce that addition to an addition of $500,000. What is the base of the program currently?
Is this something that Ms. Rose might know? Yes, Ms. Rose, can you join us? Brief at ease at 4:20. We're back on record at 4:22 in House Finance on April 1. Ms. Rose?
Good afternoon. For the record, Valerie Rose, I appreciate the indulgence, Chair, to get some information. I beg your pardon. Which member asked the question?
Representative Bynum.
Representative Bynum, thank you. Representative Bynum, in the governor's request for the senior community-based grants allocation in the Department of Health, that request was $23,294,700. Currently in HCS3, the budget for this allocation is $25,197,700. And I hope that would answer the question.
Ms. Rose, if I might, that's obviously not for all for senior centers. It's for many, many services.
Many, many services. Yes, that is correct.
Right. And is the increase you've noted, is that largely due to the subcommittee or the governor?
There were actions taken by the subcommittee, and then, of course, the governor's items are really more for salary adjustments and similar things.
Okay. Any follow-up, Rep. Bynum?
No, thank you.
Okay. All right. Rep. Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin. I just wanted to understand if it is what they are asking for. Is it for $500,000 or $700,000?
Well, on the table being debated is a reduction of my amendment to $500,000. Mm-hmm. That's currently before us, but not yet adopted.
But what is the actual amount needed, $500,000 or $700,000?
Well, the Alaska Commission on Aging says $500,000. HNET says $700,000. Any other comments? All right. I've taken the temperature of the body, and I'm going to withdraw my amendment to the amendment.
So we have before us Amendment 76 as originally crafted. Is there further discussion about it? Rep Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. So I'm not going to support the increment at the time, but I will say I do have an awesome bill that deals exactly with Meals on Wheels establishing a senior raffle that I hope this committee gets to hear before the end of the session. That's all.
Any other comments about Amendment 76? Rep Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I just wanted to say I'm not sure if I'm going to support this amendment at this time. I do recognize that there's absolute needs, but it's not as if there isn't already an increase in my understanding, in the governor's budget, plus an increase in subcommittees. So this is another increase through the amendment process. So I'm likely going to lean toward not supporting this amendment. Thank you.
Rep Hannon.
Thank you. I'm going to speak in favor of the amendment. And I think as Ledge Finance articulated, that seemed like a large increase, but it's a lot of different kind of grant programs, not just senior programs. One of the benefits of a program like Meals on Wheels is not just the nutrition, but it's the eyes on the prize, the eyes on the elder. And my sister was disabled and lived independently, and it was her Meals on Wheels delivery that sounded the alarm that her meals had not been moved from the front of the door for 3 days, that led to her then being hospitalized. She subsequently died and never went home, but it had not been for the Meals on Wheels delivery that said, this is the third day in the row that the meals have not been moved. She probably would have been there three more days because her regular scheduled caregiver was on a vacation and fell through the cracks. The cost to the state for her to go into service care immediately became huge. So when we think about what this does when we keep people in their homes and keep them out of hospital care, those volunteers who are delivering Meals on Wheels are frontline, eyes on. At least the person is picking up their meal, or someone has been in there today. And $700,000, I will tell you, is far less than her first week of care, and she ended up with 12 weeks of care before she passed.
Okay. So Amendment 76, as originally written, is before us. I don't see any other comments. I'm going to not make a closing argument, and I'm going to ask the clerk to call the roll on Amendment 76.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Bynum.
No.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Schrage.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
6 yay, 5 nay.
By a vote of 6-5, the committee adopts Amendment 76. We'll go to Amendment 77. Representative Jimmy.
Amendments. I will not be offering this amendment at this time.
Amendment 77 not offered at the present time. Taking us to Amendment 78, Representative Bynum.
One moment, could you?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Co-Chair Josephson.
That's okay. We were on Representative Bynum.
I mistakenly spoke at this. I do want to run this amendment.
77. I'll defer to that.
Okay. Mistake.
All right.
Not moved by amendment yet.
Would you like to move Amendment 77? Representative Jimmy?
Yes, I move Amendment 77.
Okay, I'll object. Representative Jimmy?
I was notified that the food bank was only asking for $1 million, and then $2 million got added in more, where SNAP benefits need to be supported more than a food bank. Last year for our food bank, they were doing a Thanksgiving give out, and one of our communities had reached out to see if they could be sent out food, and they could only come up with enough for six families. And with the price, that food will be sitting on storage and some may go to waste, and they can't find staffing to help house these food banks as well. So they talking with food bank, they are okay with, I withdraw Amendment 77.
All right. Amendment 77 is withdrawn. Amendment 78, Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I move Amendment 78.
There's an objection. Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I'm not going to speak a whole lot further to the amendment. I think the member from Tuxedo Bay had already pretty much spoke to the amendment. This is basically half of the reduction that was listed in the previous amendment.
Okay. I'll go ahead and offer some comments. When I met with Kara Durr of the Anchorage Food Bank, and of course they distribute pallets, I think, around the state, their request was $5 million. And the subcommittee gave them $3 million. So I want to say that again. The food bank said, we have need for $5 million. The subcommittee gave them $3 million. They received no increment last year, and they report the following just today. In food expenses, in the last 2 years, the cost of food expenses has increased 15 to 40%. The cost of transporting, and that includes fuel, to move their product around is 40% in 2 years. Because of SNAP cuts, there was a 10% or more, 10% or more reduction in SNAP recipients caused increasing demand at food banks. Food cost increases, so I noted food expenses, other cost increases are 20.40%. And apparently in Southeast Alaska, there were 75% more visitors spanning the last 2 years. So 75% more requests for assistance. Any other comments? Rep. Galvin on Amendment 78.
Thank you. I'll just add that 1 in 7 Alaskans face food security, 1 in 5 experience hunger. After spending time in my community at the Lutheran Pantry, which gets food from the food bank and then distributes it out beyond, what they told me is that they increase the number of folks each month by over 100 this year. So it's been a lot more people than typical. And I'll add to that, with the extra costs of transporting food, we're likely to see higher costs for sure in the next few months of food. And so my concern is we're going to see families needing more, food bank dollars not going as far. And so this is an easy one for me, very much supportive of ensuring that we do not take out the funds that were already put in. I think that this would really be a problem. And you think about the catastrophic flooding in Western Alaska, the food banks are even more necessary than ever. I was told specifically that the food pantry in Midtown was receiving more folks there too, and they're delivering boxes out. So I just think that this is an area where a time that maybe we do not shrink up the available funds for those who are serving the most vulnerable. Thank you.
Representative Tomaszewski, then Co-Chair Foster. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Being very familiar with the food bank and Fairbanks, I'm not too sure about the others. I know they have others in Mat-Su and Anchorage.
But I know Fairbanks does a really phenomenal job at food distribution. I think they take care of their resources very well. They're very efficient in the way they do things. I know that they ship out to multitudes of villages and really take care of probably the whole northern part of Alaska as far as their reach. I think they do a great job. And, you know, the way things are going, I think they're only going to have more need. And so I'm going to have to be a no on this amendment because I think it is important to keep those food banks strong. So
thank you. Chair Foster, then Stapp.
Yes, thank you. I also oppose amendment number 78. I oppose removing funds from the food bank. I do support our food bank. There was a time when I was frustrated for years that the infrastructure to get food out to rural parts of the state didn't really exist. We did have, you know, some food banks and some of our hubs, but you didn't really see it in all the hubs. You didn't see it in all of our small villages. I know that today my regional native nonprofit for the region has set up a lot of food pantries in a lot of our villages, and so they're able to accept food that is distributed by the statewide organization, and I really appreciate that, and I fully support what they're doing, so I oppose removing funds from the food bank, and I will be opposing Amendment 78.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. I just want to point out that if this amendment were to pass, there'd still be a $2 million appropriation to the food banks. We went down this road, and when we first did this, when I voted for this amendment 4 years ago, and the argument was it was because we had a SNAP backlog, and I said, hey, are we, if we do this, is this going to become a forever thing that the state does? We just give millions, and now the millions are increasing. Like, we did 1 million, then we did 3 million, and now we're doing another 3 million. It's like, folks, if the state wants to be in business of funneling state money to food banks, we should just set up a new program that does that rather than continually do this. Like, we did this for a reason, because we had a SNAP backlog. We don't have a SNAP backlog. If this amendment passes, is now, they're still going to get $2 million. But I have a feeling that next year we'll come be back here and there'll be a $5 million amendment to give to food banks in Alaska. And I, you know what I mean? Like, that was not why we ended up doing this. And I just hope people will vote yes on this amendment.
Other comments? Co-Chair Shruggy.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I'm inclined to agree with Representative Stapp. I share the concern about the increasing reliance on state funds to support food banks. I know it's difficult to look at a reduction in support for the food banks, but this is a, I mean, we'd be taking state support from an increase of 3 million to an increase of 2 million. And I think that this is probably something that'll garner my support. Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson.
Anyone else on this? In wrap up, Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. In wrap up on this, you know, if I could give money, unlimited amounts, to every nonprofit and every service provider that I have in my community that I have direct involvement with and have had direct involvement with for years, we could spend lots and lots of money. This is basically, we have an infinite increase in funding from the previous year for this item, and I'm asking for a third reduction in the increase. So we have tremendous needs. I know some of the math was kind of rolling there for some folks, and we went from 0 to 3 million, mm-hmm. which you can't calculate that. That's basically an incalculable increase. So, we have tremendous needs, and this is an add. We don't have a decrement in the budget. This money has not been appropriated yet. We're only saying we're reducing the amount that we're going to increase. So, I'm not sure how we move forward through a process. We have so many needs, and we haven't talked about many of the other things that are coming up, Co-Chair Justice, and there are going to be tremendous needs that aren't even in this budget. We haven't talked about a lot of things, so I'd urge the members' support.
Right. I'm not sure that I heard that there's any base funding at all in food banks. So I'm not sure that that case has been made. Will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 78?
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
No.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Shragi.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
6 yea, 5 nay.
By a vote of 6-5, the committee adopts Amendment 78. We're going to take, I think, certainly one more amendment and then probably break for close to 90 minutes. Amendment 79, Representative Moore.
Thank you. I move Amendment 79.
I object.
All right. Amendment 79. This is a bundled amendment that would reduce $7.5 million in GF from the education discretionary funds for workforce recruitment and retention, and instead use $2.7 million and $3.202 million, respectively, to fund the education early intervention and infant learning program. The infant learning program serves children from birth to three during the most critical stage of brain development. By supporting parents and addressing delays early, we improve outcomes and reduce the need for costly services later. Early education in Alaska is important, but putting $7.5 million into a workforce recruitment and retention is putting the cart before the horse if we don't have the facilities for newly recruited staff to work in. Instead, this money would be better spent on the earlier intervention and infant learning program. This amendment would cover a decade of flat funding to the ILP program and cover the expansion for the current 50% developmental delay to the targeted 25% delay. This amendment would also align with Part C of the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Act. I hope that the members on the committee can support the amendment.
Rep. Galvin.
Thank you. So this is an interesting amendment. I appreciate where we're coming from. And if we didn't have a need, such a big need for childcare, which is, of course, not serving many families. I appreciate that. Many can afford to have a parent at home. Many need to have both parents in the workforce. And unfortunately, based on what we heard from the governor's working group that did the research about what was needed to make sure that we infuse energy to not lose so many child care facilities, what we learned was that there are a few things that needed to be done. And one of them is, unfortunately, and I would say it's one of the big pieces of the puzzle, the math doesn't work out where we can pay enough to child care providers and have them want to stay in that job because they can't make a living, unfortunately. So we've lost many child care homes, and those in Anchorage alone, we have 8,430 children who do not have access to the child care they need. That's in Anchorage. Most child care programs are able to serve only 70% of their desired capacity due to staffing shortages. So what the $7.5 million is going directly to is to the staff. It's specific for those who are working within the SEEDS program. This is to help them. It's a stipend to keep them in their job. So I just want to make sure that we're aware of also that 68 child care programs have closed statewide, including in my own district, the Boys and Girls Club, and Bright Minds Learning Center in Mat-Su. The workforce retention programs have proven to be effective. And example, well, they're using states like North Dakota and Tennessee, but I'll use one right here at home in Juneau. They no longer have a child care desert here. And that's because what they chose to do on a very micro level is exactly what this program is doing on a macro level for the state. In a micro level, what they did is they are using funds from the city, borough, and then they're transferring those specifically to make sure that child care providers are getting an annual salary that allows them to stay where they are in that job. We've seen a positive impact of these one-time awards already when they're distributed in Alaska. Early educator workforce recruitment and retention has been a major priority for years. And I just want to make sure we're aware of that, that Alaska families really are looking for state action to improve child care. We heard even from the chambers that this is an important issue. And how to solve it? Well, it turns out it's going to take a group investment because it doesn't, the math doesn't work out for those who need the child care to be able to afford over $1,000 per month to get it done. And then those who are running these businesses, unfortunately, it's not, the equation doesn't work out to where there's enough money to go around. So we do have a federal program that helps some families to get an extra stipend to help them pay for it. But even with that, it's not enough to make this a solid system. So I will say Alaska is looking for this sort of state action to improve child care, and this is the only opportunity in the legislature this year to support more stable child care. This recruitment and retention program they're calling Roots is extremely popular, and more than 900 families and advocates have signed on to support it. I hope some of you have heard through your email that this is important. So I'm worried about taking this off the table for Alaskan families and for our workforce. So with that, I do not support this.
Rep. Stapp, Hannon, and then Jimmy. Rep. Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Justin. talk about once in a blue moon. I think I'm inclined to agree with Representative Galvin. I also do like the basically reallocation of where the money is being incentivized. So I'm hoping I can find a third pathway forward where we can do a reduction that also funds ILP money. So I would actually like to make a conceptual amendment to Amendment 79. That reduces the reduction of $7.5 million to the child care funds and funds the ILP through a reduction in the capitalization of the fire fund. So there's currently $60 million in the fire fund. If you were to do that, you would reduce the capitalization to $57.58 million. And I think that's probably a fair pathway forward where we have a budget-neutral amendment. That's my conceptual amendment.
Can Representative Stapp just restate that one more time?
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Joseph. My conceptual amendment 1 to Amendment 79 would restore the $7.5 million reduction to the child care benefit in the appropriation of public assistance and add a decrement of $3,020,000 from the fire suppression fund to accommodate the increment to the infant learning program.
All right. Representative Stapp, there are two components to the infant learning program. One's $3,020,000, one's $2.7 million. Were you trying to fund just part of the ILP request in this?
Well, I could do the 5.7 out of the fire fund too. I think that's probably acceptable if that's what the committee would prefer.
But yes.
Okay.
Please. I mean, Rep. Stapp.
So I'm going to restate my conceptual amendment,
yes,
co-chair. Because I actually had drafted it to 80 rather than 79, but so that the two part appropriation, there would be $2.7 million out of the fire fund for the second half of the appropriation, and then $3,020,000 out of the fire fund for the divided portion which would bring the total funding to $5,700,020 out of the fire fund to fund the entirety of the ILP appropriation, if that makes sense.
And leave the Roots grants in place.
Correct, and remove the reduction to the Roots grants.
We have an amendment to the amendment that I am not objecting to. Is there any objection to the amendment? Did Ledge Finance understand the amendment to the amendment? It reports that it did. Okay. So Amendment 79 has been amended. We now have amended Amendment 79. It is the property, so it's called, of Rep. Moore. Rep. Moore, are there any other comments about Amendment 79 as amended? Rep. Hannon.
Thank you. I'm going to speak in favor of the amendment. I was going to speak in favor of it either way, but I appreciate the amendment making it a position that some members can support. And although I've argued that we shouldn't take money out of our fire fund and I wanted more money, we create a fire in our communities. And I wanted to just speak on the record for a moment about the connection between childcare and infant learning programs. By having highly trained childcare centers and childcare workers who are familiar with kids in developmental stages, many of the children, if this is your one and only, you don't notice necessarily delays. If it's your sixth or seventh, you probably do. But for many of our kids who are going to be identified and need infant learning program interventions, the awareness of the delays come from the assistance of a skilled and a professionally trained childcare worker who is familiar with infant developmental stages. And that is an area of our childcare services that is really lacking. Those are programs that close because they have very small ratios and very little option for recruiting people to work in infant-serving childcare programs. So it's important for us to have adequate childcare, and we sort of think as the toddler and rambunctious kids, but those infant-serving childcare centers are vital to us being able to identify kids who are going to need early interventions in ILP services. So I wasn't going to be able to support the amendment cutting that, but I am going to be able to do it with it being cost neutral, remaining the child care grant programs so that professional retained folks who've seen kids before continue to see them and help us identify and reach out to infant learning programs so that we reduce long-term disabilities, because the earlier we intervene with kids, the more success we have with them. And thank you.
Before we agreed without objection to amend this amendment, in the queue, apologies, Rip Moore, was Rep. Jimmy and Rep. Bynum. So I want to make sure, did you wish to speak to the amended amendment?
Just a comment that this will help provide teaching future preschoolers in our following communities. Eek, good news, Macquariac, Bethel, Napakia, Gatchmasha, Ktunun, Ganganak, Agula. That's it.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. It sounds like that I've persuaded the group to vote yes on this without speaking, so thank you.
We have an amended amendment.
I think I have the objection. I'll withdraw it.
Is there further objection to the amended amendment? Actually, the amendment, not the amended amendment. Well, it is amended. In final, is there further objection to this amendment, 79, as amended? Hearing and seeing none, we adopt the amended amendment. All right, we're going to do, I think this next one could be fast. Rep. Moore, Amendment 80.
We will be withdrawing Amendment 80. And I will also withdraw Amendment 81. And I will also be withdrawing Amendment 83.
Oh, there's
There's 82. That's mine. I withdraw.
I'm sorry.
Jumping ahead.
I'm jumping ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm withdrawing. The chair withdraws Amendment 82. Rip Moore. This is a wholly new subject. I think what we're going to do, do we all agree we're on Amendment 83?
She withdrew 83, so we're on
technically 84.
Oh, sorry. Withdrawn. Apologies. All right. What we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, I can't promise that all of our nourishment is going to be ready at this moment, but we're going to adjourn, and we're going to take up the third meeting of the day. Just one moment. So we're calendared to start a third meeting in 5 minutes, but I don't think we want to do that. So the chair is delaying the start of that. Is that all right? To 6:30 p.m. See you here at 6:30. Second meeting is adjourned at 4:55.